But again, they follow up and rectify their mistake. Bailey Williams, high left footer this time. Aaliyah against Shaqie, and Norton was so close as he goes to them from the side. The Bond, he's always a force to be reckoned with. Waited for the ball to get to the front, and he scored! He shoots, he scores, he's fourth off the ground all the way. And Ken Hinckley looks like a stone statue. Just shut, completely expressionless. What can he say?
As the siren signals a seismic upset at Adelaide Oval, it will be a grand final for the dreamers, for the romantics, for the nostalgic. The full genius of Luke Beveridge inspires the Bulldogs to a date with destiny against Melbourne over in Perth. They built Port Adelaide by 71 points.
We've had a couple of injuries in recent times, and we've had injuries to key players, but by and large, you know, our group have been fit and healthy for a little while. Our staff do an incredible job behind the scenes, nurturing and helping our players be at the peak of their physical performance and mentally as well, with the challenges that they face. I think, you know, we're, you know, the group think and the squad sort of mentality, when you consider that, you know, there's been 41 players, as you know, that has at least played an AFL game this year, and they all really feel a part of it. Even the two boys in Will Hayes and Dom Bedendo, who haven't actually played senior game, they're just still a really significant part of what's happening. And I think they're urging each other on that I get what you're saying, but there's still a hell of a lot to play for, and the inspiration from within and what they're doing is just motivating our players, and now we get a look.
The Dogs travel the toughest road to bring Port to the end of theirs. They turn the power off in Adelaide and set up a historic grand final showdown against the Demons, a team they beat for their first ever flag back in 1954. It's one for the historians in 2 weeks' time.
I totally agree. We had what we needed. We had the build-up we wanted, and you know, we came out and got blown off the park very early by the Bulldogs. They put us under enormous pressure around the ball. They put it forward, they turned it into goals, and then we started, you know, we had to start chasing everything, because it was a prelim final. There was no tomorrow when you're in that position. You have to go for stuff, which turns the game into probably as big a disaster as it was by the end of it, because we're not sitting there just accepting, wanting to get beat. That's probably not the perfect time for me to talk too much about what happened early, because when you get into this stage of the year and it's a prelim final, so many emotions that are going on, and what you need and what you want and what you hope and wish for at the end of tonight. We got nowhere near what that was, and you know, so it probably needs a bit of time to digest and think clearly through it. But we have no excuses. We have no reasons that were outside of our control. We have what we needed, and we just didn't perform.
The search for answers begins at Port Adelaide after looking the proverbial gift horse in the mouth. A dream run into a prelim becomes a nightmare during a 71-point loss. The who, what, where, why and how will be fascinating in the aftermath of that loss. What might have been for Port Adelaide? This is Sunday Crunch Time for Athena Home Loans. Ah, yes, indeed. Good afternoon. Welcome to Sunday Crunch Time. However you're finding us, wherever you're finding us, I hope you're enjoying your Sunday afternoon, your Sunday morning into your Sunday afternoon, which for some will be coming off the back of a day or a night that they'd soon forget. And for others, the smiles on faces that will not be wiped off for the next 2 weeks as we get set for the longest countdown to a grand final that we can remember, probably in the history of the game. 2 weeks from today, the grand final to decide the 2021 season will happen in Perth, and it will be Melbourne and it will be the Western Bulldogs. The last time they faced each other in a final was back in 1994. Melbourne thumped the Western Bulldogs. Gary Lyon kicked 10. And the names Liberatore, West, Hunter, Wallace, Viney, all involved. And those names live on in their sons at the D's and the Dogs. And the last time they played in a grand final, of course, 1954, the year that the Western Bulldogs won their very first. The names that day, Witten, Sutton, Collins, and Barassi, Cordner, Norm Smith, just to name a few. Sam Hargraves is my name, Michael Barlow with me, Mickey B. Would you have predicted coming into this prelim final weekend, a weekend that is normally where we see some of the best games of any year, that we would have two blowouts and two just displays of sheer dominance?
Afternoon, Sammy. Good to be on board. And yes, exactly to the point. Usually, well, the trend has been for a long time, one of the prelims is a real bottler. And then you have the other one that's traditionally a fizzer. So Friday night we had a fizzer and Melbourne went bang. And you think, okay, we've got another game tomorrow. It's the Dogs. It's the Power. This is the one I think a lot of people thought would be a one-sided affair. And however, it was a one-sided affair, but not the one-sided affair that we expected going to the match. Just kudos to the Dogs and what they've come up against. And you're going to allude to the travel, the states they've been in, the COVID tests, everything that is thrown in front of this football club. They're a club that I look at and I just have a huge amount of admiration for, because we were sitting here last week, 7 days ago, talking about how unflappable and just they're a no-excuse football club, and they rock up and they get the job done, and yeah, they just are a joy to watch at the moment.
We'll go through all that in just a moment, and we do commiserate for Geelong fans and we do commiserate for Port Adelaide fans. Those are two teams that would have come into this thinking, well, it was only Richmond that denied us last year, Port in a prelim and then Geelong in a grand final. Surely this year's our year. Surely Port Adelaide fans are thinking we're much better placed this year than we were last year. Look at the dream run we've had into finals. We beat the Dogs in round 23. We stopped the talk. We can't beat a top four side. We easily account for Geelong in the first final, and then it just all fell apart. And for the Cats as well, you know, many people saying that no, that game plan has served them well and served them true, and it was only really Richmond that have been able to undo it on a regular basis. So if I feel for those fans, but I'll tell you, I am so happy for Bulldogs fans and Melbourne fans. And Michael Bull, it's times like these when you get reminded of what one of the most beautiful aspects of our game is, and that's the connection to family and to friends that you experience these moments with. And I was reading an interview with Gary Lyon in the Herald Sun where he speaks about the WhatsApp chat that he's got with his kids and how that was the other night, and the, you know, the legacy and history that's there. And my heart and my mind go to one of my best mates whose dad passed away earlier this year, and they're all a Mad Demon family. And Luke, his brother, actually texted us during the show last week saying that he was finding it hard to not be able to experience it with his brothers and sisters with their dad passing. But I text my mate after the Demons won, and I said, Kev will be somewhere smiling. And he said it was actually 6 months ago to the day that he passed. And so your heart goes to them. And our mate Cam Luke, who's, you know, loving this Bulldogs experience because it's all about family for him as well. And we want to hear about that. 0433 98 11 16. That's the beauty of the game, and where it brings a tear to the eye and where it warms the heart is being able to see people, and especially at times when we're not able to see in some states our family and friends, and how it helps connect you still to them.
Yeah, and my girlfriend's family is a Mad Bulldogs family.
Is that right?
They are. They're a Mad Bulldogs family, and my girlfriend's kind of, you know, she's at an arm's length from supporting the Dogs, because now she's a Fremantle person. She's a strong Fremantle, has a strong Fremantle connection.
So she says to keep you.
But then last night, like for the whole year, she I watch obviously a bucket load of football, and she watches, sits next to me and saddles up and does work on her laptop and all that. But last night I went and was getting ready and just poured myself a light refreshment, and I come back into the lounge room. She's got the beanie and the scarf of the Bulldogs on. So there's some fair-weathered fans at this time of year as well, Sam. So we will refer to the Lions and the crusted-on supporters that go through thick and thin. I've got a couple of Melbourne supporters of whom I'm in a WhatsApp group, and it's aptly named Oscar McDonald, because Oscar McDonald used to play for Melbourne, now at Carlton, and last year they weren't going so well. And this is when the message thread started, and we named it after Oscar McDonald. He might not have had his best night the night we started the group.
Sure.
But these two boys, they've been through so much. Melbourne supporters have been through more so than anyone. you know, the guys that are my age or our age, that are, you know, your 30s to 40s, that just haven't had any success, devoid of success, and now it's their time. Well, is it their time?
I often get jealous of those family connections during these times. I mentioned earlier, my dad was a Collingwood supporter his whole life. His father barracked for Carlton, so he said, well, I'm not going to barrack for the same team as my dad. And I did the exact same thing with him. So I would have loved to have been, you know, had that shared passion with him. But he barracked for Collingwood, so I just couldn't bring myself to do that, which is a source of great angst for my beautiful partner, Evie, who's been a 19-year member and just can't stand the fact that I had the choice to barrack Collingwood. Said, no, I'll jump on the Hawthorn bandwagon, thanks. But you mentioned the pain that Melbourne have had, and this is why this will be, interestingly enough, in the 18-team era, Michael Barlow, Max Lawton tweeted this last night, this is only the second All-Victorian Grand Final, and weirly, it's
2 years where
Victorians can't be there.
Yeah.
And it won't be played in Victoria. So without looking like we're being fully Victorian biased, there is a romance to this, and there is a shared pain between these two clubs. The Dogs know what it's like to go so long, 62 years between drinks for them. Everybody who didn't barrack for the Bulldogs in 2016 was hoping for them to get that win. They're now probably
hoping
the villain.
Unrealistically, before the start of the match, we were talking off air, weren't we? That 2016 match, and we'll come back to it, is one that you just look back on and think, how?
How did Sydney lose that?
Well, how did Sydney lose that? Yep. But how did this bunch of misfits essentially put on the red, white and the blue and go out there? And you had Toby McLean, who was 19, Josh Dunkley was 19 or 20 years old, a remarkable feat, one of which they'll continue to jump on the back of the momentum of.
Yeah, and so they go in almost the villains this year, the Bulldogs, in a couple of weeks' time, looking to spoil the party for Melbourne and Melbourne fans. And one of the things that I was reading this interview with Gary Lyon, was him talking about the pain, you know, from the Norm Smith curse when he was sacked in 1965, the 87 prelim, you know, when Gary Buchanara, the Jim Stein's running over the mark, to the 88 grand final, 96-point loss, 2000, 60-point grand final loss, that 2018, 66-point prelim loss. But it's not just that. It's the 1996 merger. That was as painful as it gets for footy clubs to have to experience that, almost on the brink of that. And then, you know, losing loved clubmen along the way, Troy Broadbridge, Sean Wright, Dean Bailey, Robbie Flower, of course, Jim Stein's, who was not only fighting to save Melbourne's life and future, but his own as well. And then Neil Danaher with the MND, and there's just so much wrapped up in this. And they've had to go through, you know, the tanking investigation, 13 years without a fight. So you can't help but be happy. And I think I tweeted the other night that even if you don't barrack for Melbourne right now, every heart's beating true for the red and the blue. You can't help but be wrapped for the club, but certainly for me, the fan base.
And I'm again, looking at through the lens of the year that they've had. 12 months ago, there was no coach under more pressure than Simon Goodwin, was there?
100%.
Going into this season, it was, and I think it was probably more so that the expectation was that they would drop further or stagnate again, and Simon Goodwin would be under pressure. And kudos to him. You can actually see a different demeanour. I think from the outside looking in, he's taken a step back from essentially the game plan, and yes, he still would have a huge amount of input to it, but he goes down and sits on the bench with the players, and you can just see that connection with his players on the bench. When things are going well, no worries, it's all good. But when things aren't going so well, he can just realign and push them in the right direction. So it's a club at the moment that has weathered a storm and committed to something at the start of the year. The Nathan Jones story, and there's so many stories within the football clubs alive at this time of year where you look at it and you say, there's more to it than meets the eye. But when you see the Nathan Jones story, I don't think it's there for everyone to see. There's not more to it than meets the eye, because everyone can see the raw emotion attached and the investment a player like Nathan Jones has put into that club for a long period.
One of the things that's standing out for me for both these clubs is watching the players who don't get selected and watching how they react and watching their buy-in and investment. And there's an old saying that not everyone can be the best player, but you can all be the best teammate. And that's something that's standing out for me, for these two teams. When the camera pans when you look at the social media, when you look at the engagement. So when you watch Mitch Wallace walk out arm in arm with Cody Waitman, the guy, and it's simplifying it, but who's essentially taken his spot in the team, they're arm in arm, hugging and laughing and enjoying. Mitch Wallace has got every right to be as filthy on a club as anybody, given that he was their leading goal kicker last year.
And missed the 2016 grand final as well.
2016. So. You know, so to see that kind of buy-in, that kind of selflessness, oh, that's one of the things that I'm
and there would be,
loving.
There would be.
And from the Demons as well, yep. All those guys.
Yeah, Malkin,
so,
Jones.
Yeah, absolutely.
There would be some burn, though. Like, clearly there's some burn, but the ability of that club, yeah. When the eyes are on you, let's get together and let's make sure that we're in this together. 41 players have played for the Doggies this year.
What's playing... Rare ears.
I'm just hearing a little bit of background noise, but if we are on air at the moment,
I hope we are. There's something else that started playing. We're baring our hearts here. We're getting 40, emotional and deep.
41. I'll just speak a bit louder. 41 players have played for the Dogs this year, so they've spun the magnets. They've spun the magnets, and even to the press conference around Luke Beveridge saying the two players that haven't played, you know, he mentions them personally and says these guys are as invested and as involved as anyone.
So I think it's either nine. Daryl from Ringwood has texted in, and please do so, 0433 98 11 16, 1300 736 736. If you can hear two things at once, actually let us know if you wouldn't mind. Daryl says, hi fellas, nine of the 2016 team played last night by my reckoning. Great rebuilding from the Dogs. And it is, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. But we'll get stuck in, Michael Barlow, to the crunch for Renault Traffic, built for business. So the Dogs, my favourite band of all time is Crowded House. Mm. One of their great songs, Four Seasons in One Day. Dogs have been to five states in 12. Mm. They've had a hard slog in the wet in Tassie. They've got on a plane and gone to Brisbane
a
and played
Brisbane,
a humid and slippery Brisbane.
120 minutes of it.
To play a one-point thriller, one of the most, I think, there's physically draining games, as you will know, which they've had in week one. The emotional drain of such a tense and frenetic game is the next one. They then have to fly to WA.
With their captain under an injury cloud, their buzzy little small forward that's up and about out of the side.
Then they get to Adelaide, denied the ability to train during the week, despite the fact that they've had 14 COVID tests in 25 days, and they've all come up negative.
Hey, that one, I'm going to say the players wouldn't have been too filthy about not having to train the day before.
Really?
Not that it's a tough training session or anything, but at the end of the day, it's probably just, let's get to it.
They could be forgiven for being a little bit sluggish, a little bit lethargic, a little bit slow out of the box. The build-up to me, I started to go back. My mind went to Rocky III. So you've got Rocky there in the hotel. Yep. Mickey's there going, come on, Rocky, when are we getting in the real training?
And this is Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 is Rocky, blue collar type of Rocky.
Then he gets a bit of money. Yeah. He's got the prestige. He's training in a hotel. He's got a water bed. He's got all the mod cons. He's comfortable. He's sort of like Conor McGregor now. He's training in the most plush circumstances. The cameras are there. He's having a bit of fun. Then the screenshot goes to Clubber Lang, who's training in a shoebox apartment, doing chin-ups in his doorway to get himself ready and fit. He's hungry. He's lean. He wants to eat. That's the kind of difference I felt between the prep. And this is what we saw. The Dogs were Clubber Lang. They were hungry. They'd been at a disadvantage in the build-up to this game. And they mugged Port Adelaide, and they were five goals up within 14 minutes, and the damage was absolutely done.
Mm. It was an ambush, wasn't it? It was an absolute ambush from the blue collar versus the perceived luxuries that the actual luxuries that Port Adelaide had in terms of the preparation. So the ambush came, and what I saw, again, halfway through that first quarter, I texted a mate of mine that used to be involved at Port Adelaide, and I said, what's going on? Because I think, like everyone, I was like, I'm in utter shock here. I'm in utter shock. He immediately rings me back, and he was devoid of answers as well. So it was permeating through the whole state of South Australia, both in the positive of those Adelaide supporters that are probably thinking, how good is this, Port Adelaide are getting pumped, but also the Port Adelaide people were just at a loss as to how this was happening. Because, and prelims, and I'm happy to talk about this in some real length, as the show goes on, prelims are the most anxiety-riddled games that you will get. They are the most anxiety-riddled games because it's win and go through. And at least if you win, you get to experience the grand final. If you lose, you know, it's so much what could have been, and Port Adelaide have now been there 2 years in a row and haven't got the chocolates.
So they have their best first quarter for the year. Their second best was actually round nine against Port Adelaide as well. We'll go into a lot more detail about this game, and I'm trying to figure out why we were so seduced into, I think majority of experts would have tipped Port Adelaide, and we're going to try and figure out what where we went wrong and why we might have been lulled into a false sense of security with Port Adelaide. But 7-2 to 1-1, the game was over at quarter time, and if it wasn't, then the 5-2 second quarter, a 59-point halftime lead, meant it absolutely was. So we will go through the who, what, where, why and how on the other side of this. Renault traffic, keep your business moving with 30,000-kilometre service intervals. Sunday crunch time is all for Athena Home Loans. After the break, we'll listen back to the final few minutes of that epic preliminary final. Actually, I don't know if we will do that, but we'll get to the highlights at one point. But we will go through with a fine-tooth comb what unfolded last night on the other side of this Sunday crunch time.
Just going to ask you about overriding emotion at the moment, Ken. Can you sum it up, or is that too hard at this moment?
No, it's not too hard. It's clearly just total disappointment. I mean, this game, you put everything into it, and you give everything you've got. Players, coaches, staff, everyone. This is a whole of footy club thing. We all work so damn hard to get where we want to go, and it gets ripped away from you. It gets ripped out of your hands, and you know, there's nothing more that you can say other than you're totally disappointed. And tonight's not the night to think of anything other than it's real and it hurts.
Ken Hinckley, Port Adelaide coach, reflecting on what was a shock 71-point loss to the Western Bulldogs last night at the Adelaide Oval. It's the third time in a row that they've lost a win-or-go-home final at home. So 2017 and then last year in 2020 against Richmond by 6 points, and this was a 71-point shellacking that no one saw coming, Michael Barlow. Maybe the Geelong form line is false form, which we've seen now given what happened to them against Melbourne on Friday night. But just break the numbers down. So how did this game get away from them so quickly? Where was it won for the Bulldogs?
Well, straight away, and it's there for everyone to see that, what was it, a plus 37 in terms of score in the first quarter. But what was behind that plus 37 was the formula in finals football. At the contest, ground position from clearance, put the opposition backs under pressure, and then it was a perfect storm for the Doggies. When they did go inside forward 50, Port Adelaide would fumble and slip over, and the Dogs were clean. So in terms of those numbers, Q1, plus 23 in the contest. So that is...
You were texting me this last night, and you were irate.
Well, that's world record. That's 30% on top of world record pace. If you went plus 23 a quarter, each quarter, that's, do the math, plus 92. I'm pretty good at that. 92, yeah. And that I think the world record, or well, the world record in terms of competition record, is plus 60 across the game. So plus 23, plus 9 at clearance in the first quarter, plus 6 contested marks. So that's just, and so much of this is an attitude to compete. So my take on it is 2 weeks for this Port Adelaide preparation, and so much build up, and so much of the commentary was around, you know, it's Port Adelaide to lose. And did that get inside their psyche? And did the Doggies actually embrace that and say, you know what? Again, this underdog status, there's a little bit of disrespect here, I reckon, in terms of what the Dogs are within their four walls talking amongst themselves. There's a bit of disrespect around, Jack McRae, you're a bloody good player. And I don't think anyone's really accepting that at the moment. Tom Liberatore, you are as good as they get. Willem Drew starts on the bench.
I did footy SA this morning.
Yeah.
Matt Rendell has blown up deluxe about this. So Willem Drew goes to Libba in round 23, completely took him out of the game. Libba was the most influential player in round 9 when the Dogs beat Port Adelaide. They had their choice, Ken Hinckley, right? Explain this to me. So you've got an injured Marcus Bontempelli. You've got Jack McRae, who's torched the Lions a week before, who was going at 20 metres per disposal. He was doing everything. He was his best game ever. And then you've got Tom Liberatore, who would all start at the source with him. They had the choice of three Dogs mids that they could have gone with, and they start him on the bench to set a tone early.
Yeah.
They just opened the door and said, come right through.
Yeah, cut the head off. It's that analogy, isn't it? Go and get Tom Liberatore, start Willem Drew. It's the proven formula. Start him on him at the first centre bounce and actually take away that first possession. Because Jack McRae gets a lot of the football. He gets a lot of clearance, but his main weapon is his ability to get to the vision of that first possession player. And they know he's there. They feed, and that first possession turns into a second one. They go inside forward 50, and they score. So Willem Drew starts. So chasing the game from the start. So there's a little bit about, were Port Adelaide relatively happy with themselves in terms of that big win against Geelong? And we've got some audio here of Chad Corns, their coach, SENSA, a couple of weeks ago around that perfect scenario that they played against Geelong. And was it just a case of repeating that 2 weeks later?
I think so. In my opinion, it was. I just loved our pressure, loved our attack on the ball, loved how we took the game on. And the coaches did a really good job planning for this game. I've heard you say Kenny was outstanding, and he was. But not only with Kenny, the way the other coaches planned how we needed to play the game and beat Geelong, the players executed it perfectly. So, yeah, everyone was pretty wrapped.
So that's Chad Corn speaking to SENSA. And this is the key thing. We did a really good job of planning for this game. Mm. Could you say the same thing without being in the four walls, but did it look to you like Port Adelaide had planned for the difference makers for the Western Bulldogs?
Well, not really, no. Well, not at all. The Willem Drew one is the one that's really, really obvious that bang, in you come. You should start in the centre's bounce and come in and tackle and harass, which he did. You watched Willem Drew's game. He had 8 possessions, but he had 8 tackles. He got on and started to get to work and restrict Liberatore's output. The Allaire situation. So in that audio from Chad Corns, it's a tough situation to be in. Again, hindsight's a beautiful thing. And was that messaging and the messaging coming out of Port Adelaide throughout the last 2 weeks about how it all went right? And yes, we're at the top of our game. And it was the yin and the yang of their performances. The qualifying final outstanding, but you can't bottle that. Like it's the Ross Lyonism. He used to say this is why football and AFL football is such a hard environment. Nothing is guaranteed. So that performance against Geelong, there's zero guarantee, actually, that you can just walk out and that's entitled to you to happen again. You've actually got to go above and beyond, and it's hard to go to. It's an uncomfortable game to play, and to actually get the result the Dogs got last night, it's uncomfortable. You have to dare to dream. You have to open yourself up to the possibility of disappointment. And that's what they did, whereas Port Adelaide, there was a lot of their players looking around for others to get it going, and it just wasn't happening.
You've been in this situation before where you've gone all the way through to a grand final. For those who haven't, and it might not be this simple, but do you go through a thought? So you step up. I equate it to stepping up steps. So you've got to take it to another level each time. Is that what you find in finals? So for Geelong, for instance, 72% winning ratio under Chris Scott in the regular season, 38% in finals. And it would look at times that Geelong don't go up another level for finals. Is that an oversimplistic view? Or is it true that for every final you get to, for every stage that you progress, you do have to take it up another notch?
Yeah, they're hard to win. Like, clearly, they're hard to win. And when you are pitted in finals football, it's the margin for error is minute in terms of what was it? It was pretty much 5 minutes. But that game was over within 5 minutes because of just the throw the first punch mentality. Figuratively, not literally. So throw the first punch and put the opposition on the back foot and make your first play your best play. Again, to steal a Ross Lyonism, and I do it a fair bit, but make your first play your best play. If you go through the 44 magnets of both sides and you watch each player's first play, I guarantee you're seeing Port Adelaide players fumble. You're seeing Port Adelaide players slip over. You're seeing Allaire just float back from a contest rather than go out the contest. But what you're seeing on the converse is Jack McRae clean, Lath Vandermeer clean, Bailey Smith. Everyone's clean, kept their feet, kept to the basics, and from there the catch up was too extreme for Port Adelaide.
So that's the team perspective. We're going to go through the individual performances because there was some real standouts in this game, and we'll talk about those guys in detail. But just to finish off the team numbers, we're going to go to a break and come back. Adam Cooney is going to join us on the other side of it. Port actually won disposal count +2, and they were +1 in centre clearances. They were +25 in hitouts, but they had 89 turnovers, and in the first half, the Dogs kicked 6 goals straight from turnover. The Dogs ended up +30 in contested possession, +12 in inside 50s. And this is an area they've been number one all year. They were 52% inside 50 efficiency. They've been number one for the whole season. Port at 44. And the Dogs were +6 in clearances, +7 in contested marks, and +6 in marks inside 50. Their first half score of 80, by the way, they kicked 12 goals in it. They averaged 13 goals a year. So that just shows how badly Port fell away defensively in this game. The individual performances are really worth going through with a fine-tooth comb. Keep your text coming through, 0433 98 11 16. We'll get to those as well. But Doggies Brownlow medalist Adam Cooney will join us on the other side of this Sunday Crunch Time. For Athena Home Loans, kick your home loan goals at athena.com.au.
You're listening to Crunch Time.
Welcome back to Sunday Crunch Time for Athena Home Loans. Sam Hargraves, Michael Barlow with you. And there's a few texts coming through before we get to Adam Cooney because he loves it when we keep
loves
him
Sundays.
Waiting, Adam Cooney. Yeah. He loves a Sunday call and he likes us to sit there and let us...
So I reckon, go through a couple of texts.
A couple
and we'll
of texts first. He just likes a bit of a lead-in. Hi, Sam. Go D's. But boy, do we have some opposition now. Don't understand why in reference to 1964 you said Barassi, Cordner, Norm Smith. Don Cordner and his three brothers played for the D's in the 40s when my dad did. Nothing to do with 64. That's in Greg. Greg, I'll respectfully disagree. I'm referring to Dennis Cordner, who was the ruck for Melbourne that year. He's actually Melbourne's ruck in their team of the century. Came top 10 that year in the Brownlow. I think he came equal eighth. And he is one of the brothers that you mentioned. But, yeah, talking about the ruckman of that team, which was Dennis Cordner. And what about this for a following line? Cordner, Barassi and Spencer. That was their starting on ballers in that 1954 grand final. Finals does go up a notch, but it's still system driven. And yes, you have to execute it. The Dogs run in waves, harass, tackle and defend en masse. This takes effort. Port and Geelong lacked effort across the field, especially when they didn't have the footy. That's from Bill in Brisbane. The heap more to get through, but let's welcome in one of the Dogs Brownlow medalists over their journey. A famous name at the kennel. And he's been good enough to jump on the line after doing the game last night for AFL Nation. Adam Cooney, hello to you.
Happy Sunday, gentlemen.
Great to have you. Did you like how we kept you waiting again?
Yeah, you know how I like to be kept waiting. 12:30 was supposed to be the call. Oh. And you were cracking on before
what,
the break.
What have
and
we?
And then you decide to read out some text from 1954 that no one cares about.
We're 9 minutes past the expiry date of when you were meant to be on, Adam. What have you been doing with the last 9 minutes? Or what have you got planned for the rest of the day? Because you'll be taking all sorts of calls from Doggies fans in the West looking for tickets. And potentially you could get over there in time, 14-day quarantine. No, you can't. It's done. But how's the build-up look for you?
I just fed the pigs, actually, over the last 10 minutes. So I had a bit of time to spare. So they're stalking me at the moment. I'm outside. They want more Tucker. But I've only had two text messages this morning from people over in the Wild Wild West looking for tickets. Unfortunately, I don't get any this year because of the COVID situation. Generally, you get your two being a gold pass candidate and a Brownlow medal winner. So you get two tickets to every game. But unfortunately, I got an email yesterday, and so I don't get any this year. So the people of Perth, all my friends over in the West, have to actually fork out and pay for their own tickets this year.
Adam, we'll straighten up just slightly. What did you make of that performance last night? Just like Melbourne on Friday night, that was as comprehensive a prelim final performance as we've seen. The Dogs just dominant.
Yeah, it was 14 minutes of fury. 5-1, and that was all she wrote.
Yep.
So, I mean, watching the game, you could just tell from the first 1 minute, and Dwayno made the reference, they're on, and it's so easy to say, but every time we looked and the ball bobbled out onto the ground, there was an inside ring of Western Bulldogs players, and there was an outside ring of Port Adelaide players. So for the first 6 minutes, the Port Adelaide midfielders were standing around waiting for someone else to get the footy, and the Dogs players just went in, they were clean, they were sharp. I thought Liver really got them going early. Willem Drew had to go to him after that, and quite his influence, but the damage was done from there. I just thought they were so clean, so crisp, and everything went their way. I mean, ball bounced their way, but I just thought Port Adelaide were stagnant, they were fumbly. Oh, I don't know how many players must have been wearing the old moulds because they fell over time and time again. It was as poor an effort, I think, from a team that had no excuses that I've seen for a very, very long time.
Let's stay on the Dogs for a little bit. How much would the Dogs taken on board this underdog mentality around, you know, everything was going off Port Adelaide, the Dogs, everything was made about not being able to train the day before. And there was, my take on it, there was a little bit of, I think, disrespect in terms of what the Dogs actually had on the park in terms of their midfield and the chip on the shoulder that they showed early on in the match in particular, that, you know, they were up for the fight and they shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah, I think most people fell into the trap of Alex Keith being injured, the travel factor, Marcus Bontempelli under an injury cloud. But if you saw the vision of him training during the week, I mean, he looked 100%. His agility was fine. He was moving well. So I suppose most people overestimated that, the injury of Marcus Bontempelli, and then the effect of Alex Keith, who's been so rock solid for the Dogs all season. Plus, they've travelled about 433,000 kilometres over the last few weeks. I guess everyone just fell into the trap that Port Adelaide were going to steamroll them, because that's what should have happened. They should have been fatigued. They weren't allowed to train. There was, the SA government were against them. So, I mean, we know that Bevo loves his teams, but it was a pretty easy one to come up with last night if you're the coach of the Western Bulldogs. It's the us against them. No one wants us to win. No one's expecting us to win. The advertiser can't even spell our name right. I mean, all of those factors going into it, it was an easy one to sell to the players. And all they needed to do was put in 15 minutes of unbelievable effort, and it broke the spirit of Port Adelaide.
Who impressed you individually?
I actually gave Bailey Dale one vote last night. I just thought, I mean, I think he had 23, 24 disposals. Him and Caleb Daniel, every time they get the football out of the back half, magic happens.
83% efficiency too, which was phenomenal.
Well, that's what they say, the Sex Panther. 83% of the time it works every time. But I don't know if it was the kick of the year, but it was one of the best kicks I've seen. Bailey Dale, early in the first quarter, just ripped it around his body, lace out, and the Dogs are away from there. But I just thought their ball use was terrific, as it has been all season. I think I probably undersold the game of Marcus Bontempelli a touch. I left him out of the votes, but it was huge. He had 10 clearances. And I suppose we expect that from Marcus Bontempelli, but I probably didn't mention him enough on the coverage last night. I thought he was huge. Another high 30s for McRae. I think we've mentioned at times that he got into the 40s, and I think we spoke about it last week, but hasn't had a huge influence on games and maybe not even got votes. But I think his last 2 weeks, he has been unbelievable. And Bailey Smith, his Instagram followers went up another 10,000 after last night. He's a sexy man, and he plays sexy football.
He's the sexiest since Adam Cooney used to don the red, white and the blue. Let's talk about Port Adelaide really quickly. The anxieties going into prelims, you've played in a few yourself, in terms of the pressure that comes with a prelim and what's on the line, that really told for Port Adelaide. You could see visibly they were devoid of confidence, and they were all looking around for others to get to work, and it never came.
Yeah, you're right. So I've played in prelims, but I've never played and gone into a prelim with that sort of expectation that was on Port Adelaide. We've always been the underdog and knew that we were going to be in for a massive fight, and not sure if Port Adelaide fell into the trap of what everyone was saying about the Western Bulldogs and thought it was going to be a cruisy run through to a grand final. But, I said last night that there was the epitome of a choke. And people have said, well, how can you choke when you were never really in the game? But the choke came leading into it. And then the first 15 minutes of sitting back, waiting for someone else to do the job. I mean, Alir had 2 intercept marks in the first quarter and turned both balls over. He just doesn't do that. He hasn't done it all year. Small forward too, which I thought from Port Adelaide would get a huge amount of dominance once the ball hit the deck in Port Adelaide's forward line. They were just nowhere to be seen. They were nowhere to be found. Again, Dale, Jarray, Caleb Daniel, they were at the front of every pack, mopping up at half back, whereas that's where the small forwards should be. So, look, all over the park, they got absolutely obliterated. And it was obviously lost during the week where they were too overconfident and thought it was just going to happen and didn't have the intensity required to match the Dogs.
Adam, we'll let you stave off those advancing swine that you've been feeding at your palatial spread down at the Bellarine. Thank you so much, mate. Well called last night, and great to have you on this afternoon.
Thanks. I'll be tuning in for the next hour and 15 on my headphones.
Lies, all lies from our great mate Adam Cooney with us on Sunday Crunch Time. Quick break, and we'll come back with some of the individual performances that caught our eye. Get involved as well, 0433 98 11 16. John in Brisbane off the text: I think you'll find that Graham Wise was the ruckman for the 64 D's Premiership team. I used to go to school with his daughter Kim, and he used to love seeing me in the D's jumper at Girton. Grandma, that's my old school in Bendigo on casual clothes days. That's from John in Brisbane. You're 100% right, John. I was referring to the 1954 team, the last time that the Dogs and the D's played each other in a premiership. It was the Dogs first in 1954, and the ruckman that day was Dennis Cordner, but you're 100% right, in 64 it was Graham Wise. And hello to you, fellow Girtonian. Back after this quick break, and we'll be back on Sunday Crunch Time.
Yeah, Bailey Smith, congratulations, mate. The 3 goals last week, we were marvelling at how good it was, the motion kick just go one better tonight, and what a game to do it.
Yeah, no, it was a great game by all the boys. We knew it was going to be quite an adversarial game coming to, obviously, Port. Their fans so passionate, so we're just wrapped with the way we went about it tonight.
Obviously, you put some really good plans into place, looking at their defence, also changes with you up forward, because they all work well with Stephen Martin as well.
Yeah, 100%, that was great, and we know how much of a threat Alirilir is down there, so we tried to minimise that throughout the night, and yeah, just compete at ground level as best as we could.
You've been everywhere. We know it's something like five states in 13, 14 days. You're into a grand final. What is the fit? Is it relief? Is it absolute joy?
I got no idea, mate. I have sunk in. It's just, so surreal to be, 20 years of age and now in the granny. It's just a credit to all the coaching staff and the players. Marcus Bontempelli has been a great skipper all year through lots of adversity. Travel and COVID, like everyone's been dealing with. It's just been amazing, yeah.
Three last week, four this week, sneak five in the GF and it'll work well. Well done, Bailey.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
That was Bailey Smith. What a game he played. He backed up his 27-3 last week against the Lions with 23-4 goals and again proved to be a major difference. We're in Charlie Sutton's old number six. He's playing his best footy in finals as a 20-year-old. That's just extraordinary. Hasn't missed a game since debuting, Michael Barlow. Yeah. What did you make of him and who else caught your eye in this game?
Well, yeah, he was a standout, wasn't he? Hitting the scoreboard in finals, three goals last week, four goals this week. He's got that added touch of class, doesn't he? Which the Dogs, we know they've got the grunt. They know Libber at the source, McRae at the source, with that ability of Smith out in space, and Bontempelli, who's another one I'll just touch on really quickly in terms of his impact on the game. Not a huge, statistically, numbers-wise, the Bont, 20 possessions, two goals. So just every time he gets the football, he's not a junk player. He won't go deep into the defensive 50 to pick up, and stat pad. So a really influential game from Marcus Bontempelli. Jack McRae racks up the football and just has such good football IQ and the ability to get to the eyes and the vision of the contested players, as well as being a contested player himself. He was tremendous. Adam Cooney summed up Bailey Dale's game really well, wasn't it? He's an all-Australian halfback now and someone that just when he gets the football, he puts them into better positions on the ground. So they're the important ones. Stephen Martin is up for discussion. So he'll play now, won't he? He's solidified his spot in the importance of him.
They're 7-1 when he plays.
Yeah, and we looked at last week, we were discussing the conundrum they had in the ruck in terms of it had been Young playing in the ruck, and he was non-impactful against Brisbane, and it was a really disadvantage to what the Dogs could produce at ground level with Stephen Martin coming in. It's a big input. Mitch Hannon, three goals.
So
under a fair bit of scrutiny across the season, he stood up and kicked three goals, repaying the faith that Luke Beveridge has shown him for some time.
Josh Shackey did an important job on Alirilir. Alirilir still had the most intercepts, but he had him deep. Mm. Shackey made him accountable and made it uncomfortable for him. And then whenever he went up the ground, Alirilir, they looked to go through Shackey on the other way. He kicked 1-3, so could have had a day out, and he is coming of age before our eyes. But the win was Aaron Norton, so they went with McKenzie on him. They resisted the urge to put Alirilir on him. They kept McKenzie with him. And Norton had 9 marks, 6 of them contested. He had a goal assist, 7 score involvement, 4 marks inside 50, and he kicked 2-2.
Yeah. And
dominant.
Yeah, it's a night Trent McKenzie and a lot of the back six at Port Adelaide would prefer to forget. They just could not get their game going. The big one is win or Harvey contest. And as a defender, Harvey contest. Just don't get beaten. Never get beaten. Don't allow the ball over the back. They allowed that happen too much, Port Adelaide. And don't get outmarked. And so they got outmarked and the ball went over the back when they weren't outmarked. So some really big wins in the front half of the Dogs. One more, Adam Treloar.
Yeah, we'll talk about him after this because that was a real bone
nice
of contention.
Tease. That is Radiocraft there.
That is Radiocraft 101.
Tease.
Ollie Wines was the best for Port Adelaide, 38-1. And Riley Bonner had his best game as a power player, 32 disposals. Him and Dixon kicked 2. Greg and Clorinda, you're 100% right. That was the ruckman in 1964. I was referring to 54. If I accidentally said 64, I can promise you, though, that Dennis Cordner was the ruckman in 54 when the Dogs beat the D's. But I'm loving these texts. Keep them coming through. There's so much history between these two teams, and that will be a big narrative in the next 2 weeks. We've got another hour to spend with you after this on Sunday Crunch Time.
You're listening to Crunch Time.
Looking forward to spending another hour with you, Sunday Crunch Time. Wonderful to have your company. If you've just joined us, welcome. And if you've stuck with us, thank you. However you're finding us and wherever you're finding us, hope you're enjoying Sunday Crunch Time so far. Sam Hargraves, Michael Barlow, the former Fremantle star and short-time Gold Coast Suns stalwart. Great to have. And they play every year for the Michael Barlow Cup. It's a wonderful occasion that we all look forward to. But we are certainly looking forward to 2 weeks' time. The grand final stage is set. Melbourne looking to get their first premiership in 47 years up against the Western Bulldogs, who only 5 years ago broke a 62-year drought. So, Michael Barlow, we've been speaking about the who, what, where, why and how, and we wanted to leave one particular player till this segment before we turn our attention to Friday night. We're going to speak about Adam Treloar. In case you missed the first hour, our Furphy Unbelievable moment for Furphy Refreshing Ale, unbelievable, was the former Bailey Smith. 23 disposals, 4 goals. It was a career best from him. 20 years of age. I'm just going to find out. I think Andrew McLeod might be the youngest ever Norm Smith medalist, and I just want to check his age, because if Bailey Smith continues on and goes one better next week and kicks 5,
that's around his neck already.
It's around his neck. But Max Gorn might have a very big part to play in that as well. We'll speak about that in a much greater detail. Ben's in Melbourne, though, has been waiting patiently. 1300 736 736, the number to call. G'day to you, Ben.
Yeah, g'day, Sam. Michael, just a question regarding Bailey Smith. Is it the haircut and the aerodynamics of the haircut that make him fast, or is it the haircut and the appearance of the haircut that makes him fast?
I think it might be the genetic makeup of Bailey Smith that makes him very fast and very fleet of foot. I read an article on Bailey Smith heading into his draft year around the professional attributes he'd picked up through high school and his commitment to his craft in terms of weighing his food and preparing like a pro preparing like a pro by the age of 15. So that would have a fair bit to do it. And the haircut, I think, adds a fair bit to, as Adam Cooney referred to it earlier, as the sex appeal that is attached to the number 6 in the red, white and blue. Playing very nicely, and thank you for the call. But the Adam Treloar discussion, Sammy, it's a discussion around, I loved it, because I sat in the camp of that he was underperforming, and was he a magnet that may be shifted off to the side? And as soon as that discussion became, became loud within media circles, I loved the answer or the response from Luke Beveridge. Came out early in the week and said, we're backing Adam in. We're on his side. Now, we'll get to kind of the post-game and some of the aspects of that are a little bit clouded, but I liked the approach of Luke Beveridge early in the week. We're backing Adam Treloar in. He's playing, so that immediately puts Adam at ease and helps him prepare for the week ahead. And also the response from Adam, I think, would have drawn, on-field response would have drawn a lot of confidence from the early back-in from Luke Beveridge during the week.
We'll play Luke Beveridge in just a moment, because he brought it up in the post-game interview and again in the press conference after. But can I ask you this? I understand that he didn't have a good game against Brisbane, but he had a very good second half against Essendon where he had 18 disposals. I just get the sense, and I got the feeling during that week that the response to his form, yes, you can call out and say, geez, Adam Treloar didn't have a good game. I thought that's where it probably needed to end. It started to get to a point where it was maybe one of the biggest overreactions to a game I've seen. And could I just remind, and again, he won't want to make excuses, but his partner on the same night that he was at the Gabba having a down game, she was getting crowned MVP of the Queensland Firebirds in the Super Netball. She'd been away with their daughter for 18 months, pretty much. He's barely seen her. He goes to the city where his family have been, and he hasn't been able to see, and he still can't see them. So they're within arm's reach. And he said, now, I know all the other players are going through that too, but he has had a much different COVID year than a lot of people have had. So you can't blame him for that playing on his mind a little bit. And maybe that might be why I'm not putting words into his mouth, but that could have been a reason why he was distracted.
Yeah.
It was a massive overreaction to the point where it almost got people saying he was sooking for not being in the midfield, people saying he needed to suck it up.
That's an interesting one on that one, Sammy. Sorry to jump in. The midfield of the Doggies, that's why I thought maybe it might have, it would have been a hard call to put him out of the side, but I just saw they had a saturation of player there. But if you watch the makeup of the Bulldogs at centre bounce, Bailey Smith starts forward. So he plays that high half forward, that the forward that will come up to stoppage and create a bit, plays on the wing. So Bailey Smith is dominating and getting a lot of the football and getting on the end of goals. And it's not all about being around the foot. Like, most footballers want to be a midfielder and play in the middle and get the ball hit to them and get lots of possessions. This Doggies outfit is starting to find ways about maximising the strengths of all their players by,
and keeping their best players inside. So Adam Treloar has come in and had to play that high half forward role, which does bring you up around the stoppage for time. So it's a hard role to play. It is called Death Valley for a reason. And last night he was the beneficiary.
Absolutely.
Of being able to get up and around the ball. And I think a fair bit of confidence associated with the coach backing him in during the week.
At 23 disposals. He kicked one goal, two. Went at 73%. Had 11 contested, 13 score involvements. So just think about that. 13 score involvements from 23 disposals. He had two goal assists as well and 490 metres. Kane Corns made the point today on the Sunday Footy Show. We're not doing our job unless we call out the bad performance. I totally agree with that. That's fine. But I actually think it ended up going too far and got maybe a little bit too personal. Mm. And I think that there was maybe a bit of... I think the blinkers might have been on. Maybe just a bit of awareness about what, you know, his particular situation, and maybe, and not that you give people excuses, but maybe just a little bit more understanding from our point of view. Yeah. Wouldn't have gone astray. This is Luke Beveridge, who obviously did take exception to some of that commentary in a major way. This was him after the game.
And some of the ridiculous commentary and insinuations around Adam was just so distasteful from people. Like, if you're going to fail at something, don't fail at trying to pull people down. You know, I just don't know how people can sleep next to people like that when they're so vindictive. And that was nasty. I was so happy to see him play well tonight. And
well, Oliver, I said I was just interviewed by Channel 7 as I walked off the ground, and you guys do a really good job. You know, you provide positive pieces when they're warranted, and we all cop the constructive criticism when it happens. But some of that stuff was just nasty, you know, and there's probably one, two or three people who, you know, if you're going to fail in life, like fail at something that is noble, you know, fail at something that you can dust yourself off and be proud that you had a go. If you're failing at trying to pull people apart and bring them down, like two or three journalists did this week, I don't know how people around you can live with you, how they can lie in bed with you, how they can look at themselves in the mirror. It's just nasty. You know, for a guy like Adam, people know that he's had some challenges over the journey. It was just really poor, vindictive stuff, and it was really distasteful. So I'm just so happy for him tonight. You imagine the pressure he put himself under. And remember, I mean, people got short memories, how outstanding he was for our football club in the early stanzas, in the early parts of the year, to give us solid grounding up near the top of the ladder. And he has an average game last week. And look, he didn't like it. Him and I had a really good chat about preparation this week. What a great night for him, you know, to be able to withstand that and then give a, you know, great contribution for his teammates and our footy club. So I'm really proud of him and just bloody disappointed in a few people who are just really nasty.
Totally accept him calling out the people he thought went too far and were nasty. I think if he had his time again, which he sort of did because he backed over it again, I don't know if you then bring into play their loved ones in doing so. I think that is a little bit regrettable in that. Take that out of it, which I think take that out of it and everything else he said, I find myself in strong agreement with. I totally agree that in this role, in your role, you've got to call out performances that maybe aren't up to standard for A-grade players. But I think, and not from you, but I think there were sections that went too far. I mean, it's saying that, this is why Collingwood were keen to get rid of him and, you know, this is proving them right and things like that. What did you think of Luke Beveridge?
Well, yeah, it's a coach supporting his play. I'm in your camp 100%. The extra add-on or the extra mayonnaise it's put on in terms of, you know, a fairly direct attack, not attack, but a defense of his player, a bit of tit for tat. And once that became involved and the loved ones attached was maybe a bit too far for mine. Absolutely a bit too far. And I think his support of his player was justified with the performance of Adam Treloar. That's how far you have to look into it. The coaching responsibility is to protect the player.
Mm.
And I love that insight of what Luke Beveridge said around. We had some really good chats early in the week about what's the best way for him to prepare. And as I was listening to that, I'm thinking, you know what that would have looked like? It would have been Luke Beveridge probably disregarding completely that tape against Brisbane and saying, mate, this is what you've done for us early in the year. These are the type of performances you've put in. This is the role you've played to get us to a prelim final, and we're backing you in. Mm. And Adam Treloar would have just walked out feeling like all the bricks associated with his house have just been pitched off his shoulders and just a clear head, because all the opinions that matter to the player are the coach and teammates, and those attached really within the four walls of the football club. So great coaching, the added pile, and we will hear more about that. And that won't stop there with a 2-week build-up to the grand final. All parties involved with that, I think, will have another say.
But I'm wondering too, knowing how astute and I'm just trying to think of the right word that doesn't make it sound like it's a criticism of Luke Beveridge. Because I think we've made it really clear that we don't like the friends and family or partners being brought in to the criticism of the people that you think were unfairly harsh on Adam Treloar. I'm wondering whether he's fired that so that every bit of attention for the next week goes to him.
And that's, I hadn't thought about it in that
so
vein.
He's picked a fight now. So, and I'm just spitballing here, but has he picked a fight with certain sections of the media to say, I'm going to go after you, and then you can come after me, and that will take the attention away from my players.
If this is a fair comparison, the 2013 final where Ross Lyon called out a member of the media, and it was a big win for Freo, and we were going into a prelim a couple of weeks later. A lot of the attention going throughout that whole week was on the Ryan Crowley situation. So again, for those listening who don't understand the full context of it, there was a question asked about Ryan Crowley's tagging tactics and whatnot, and should he be rubbed out and all this. And Ross essentially went in for the bat for his player and said, look, right now, I think you've got to understand that there's two sides to this story and that Ryan Crowley might have been on the end of some stuff and blah, 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 blah. But you're right, as a player, looking back on it, it just gives you an overwhelming sense of pride in your club and your coach, because you're like, oh, He's staunch towards me. He's a stoic part. He's the stoic figure of our club, and he is going to protect us at whatever cost. So it's a great call in terms of that distraction for the players, especially this next week where there's a fair bit of floating time before the grand final, and a fair bit of the discussion will be about this, and Luke Beveridge will weather it, and within the four walls he'll say, leave that. You just got to concentrate on what you guys have to as I look after this, because you know, it's not your responsibility to have to comment on this stuff. It's me.
It's going to be a fascinating 2 weeks. There's going to be we've never had a build-up to a grand final like this. It's very NFL-esque. It's very much what they do with the Super Bowl, giving a 2-week lead in. The Brownlow, of course, will be Sunday night over in Perth, so that will gain a fair bit of attention and keep the storylines flowing. But how we fill the next couple of weeks is going to be fascinating, and the storylines that are going to filter their way through are going to be part of a brilliant build-up to a historic grand final. We'll talk more about that on the other side of this, but we've given a lot of attention to the Dogs and the Power, as we should have, but Friday night was equally impressive. A dominant display from the D's over the Cats to get through to their first grand final since 2000, looking for their first grand final win since 1964, a 47-year drought. And Max Gawn, wow. What a performance. We'll talk about that next Sunday crunch time for Athena Home Loans. Kick your home loan goals at athena.com.au. We have switched over to the app. I know if you're listening to us and you're hearing me say that, you would have already switched over to the app. But if
Tell your friends, tell your family,
your loved ones that we are on the SEN flip.
A few people part are sick of tags over there on SEN track, are they?
Yeah, a couple of people have just said, and not often does my voice come across as more appealing than anybody's, but in that circumstance, I think it is. This is Sunday Crunch Time.
Quickly thrown up, Harms got hold of it, he was loose, the stoppage, he wheels around and kicks the goal. Utterly unmarked.
Up goes Sparrow, knocked down, Neil Bullen has shaped the kick, which has gone through. Off the outside of the boot. And the Demons getting some reward now. Pickett's loose here. The tap down almost went to him from Radical. That's just madness from Geelong. Stolen by Petrarca. He should go. He does.
Petrarca has a look deep and then goes shallow and plonks it to Gawn. It was touched on the way. The big ruckman swings and goes. Slapsy Maxi. That's magnificent. Viney out of the middle to Petrarca on the burst, steps back inside, gives it to Gawn. Will he from 55? He will! He can! He does! Oh, Max has got an eye toward being the first premiership captain since Barras.
appetite for destruction, the D's. It's in quickly. McDonald to his own advantage. Get the party started! Grab by Gord. He's done it again! Oh, he's kicked his fourth. He has taken it to the absolute max.
He might end the night as the mayor of Perth, Max Gordon, the way this is going. He's put through his fifth.
This feels like Melbourne's time. A hell of a win for the Demons. They're into the grand final for the first time in 21 years. Oh, what glorious times lie ahead for the D supporters.
Feels terrific for our footy club. You know, it's, we've worked incredibly hard to be involved in these games and significant games. And, you know, I sit here and I think of all our supporters back home. I think of all the times, hard times they've been through. And, you know, we get an opportunity now to do something really special. And, you know, we've earned that right. And, you know, I think there's a level of excitement, but there's a level of still, you know, a job to do. And, you know, we'll progress that way.
The Demons absolutely decimated the Cats on Friday night, 19-11, 125-6, 6-42, 83-point win. So impressive was it, Michael Barlow, that Luke Skywalker himself tweeted out a congratulatory message. Mark Hamill congratulated the Demons. The force is strong with the D's and everything shaping up. That the dark side won't prevail in the Demon story, and that the light might shine on what's been a massive premiership drought, 47 years since their last one in 1964. And it's amazing that they're going to play the Bulldogs, who only back in 2016 ended a 62-year drought. And, of course, these two teams played back in 1954 in that grand final, 102-51 win for the Bulldogs, their first ever grand final. Witten, Sutton, Jack Collins kicked seven. Charlie Sutton was the coach, of course. And for Melbourne, Ron Barassi, Dennis Cordner, Spencer McMahon, these are the names coached by Norm Smith. So there's a lot of history attached to this. But take us through, I mean, Max Gorn was a gladiator. Maximus Decimus Gornidius will be his new name. Five goals for him, 33 hitouts. What a prelim final performance for the ages.
Fair game and a fair performance by you in the first hour and 20 minutes of Sunday Crunch Time. You brought up Rocky III,
yep.
Clubber Lang, and associated the Doggies as Clubber Lang. And the Port Adelaide side as Rocky, who was just getting a bit ahead of himself. And then Luke Skywalker, the Star Wars reference, gets involved. And the force is with the D's, and they look the side to beat, don't they? They'll go in the favourites off the back of that performance, finishing on top of the ladder, the clean run into the finals. The Stephen May situation was a slight concern there, but there's no issues there. So in terms of the Demons and Max Gorn, like, what a game. What a game that he put together. He will have a more formidable opponent. The Rhys Stanley situation, the ruck situation at Geelong has held them captive for a number of years, hasn't it, in terms of not getting the result that they would have liked in big finals with that dominance in the air from Max. And yes, they were five goals, and you put him in those situations again, does he kick all five? But they were some remarkable goals. But it's born off the back of contest, the ability to do the basics well, of which Max does. But on the flip side, it's not going to be as easy as rinse and repeat for Max Gorn or the Melbourne Football Club in 2 weeks' time.
He was doing things that ruckmen just aren't supposed to be able to do, running through the middle and launching from the front edge of the square, snapping.
His ball drops up around his nipples, so he gets the purchase.
There wouldn't have been a, oh, just sometimes footy just brings you joyful moments. And did you that was what that was to me. Again, I don't barrack for Melbourne. I don't barrack for Geelong. I thought Melbourne would win, and I thought they would be able to win. I was certain that they would win.
Yeah.
But I didn't think that's how they would win, and I certainly didn't think that that's the influence. I knew that Max would have an influence, and I actually tipped him for a Gary Ayres medal coming in to the final series.
So you're a bit bullish?
But that wasn't the way I thought it would unfold, and it just brought sheer joy, I think, which is one of the great parts of our game. And Mason Cox tweeting, "Welcome to prelim folklore," after it, I thought was...
Come on, Mason.
Well, I that's tongue-in-cheek as well. Yeah. But that's not who I thought of when I was watching him tear it apart in that quarter where he just couldn't miss and was kicking the bulk of those goals. I went back to 99, the last quarter, Carlton Essendon, where Cooter had been playing in a back pocket, gets put into the middle within the first few minutes of the last quarter and has 10 disposals, 6 marks and 2 goals. I'd love to know off the text, 0433 98 11 16, Max's prelim performance will be footy folklore.
Yeah.
Who else do you put it up in the echelons with? What other prelim performances? You know, last time the D's and the Dogs met in a final was actually 1994. That was a semi, though. Gary Lyon kicked 10. Only 4 people, I think, have kicked 10 goals in a final. So who else stands out as far as prelim?
So Cooter and the Gawn situation are the high-end players, aren't they, standing up. It's become synonymous over the more recent history.
Clay Smith is the other one. Yeah.
The role player. Coming of age in prelims, Clay O'Donoghue-Smith you speak of. Tory Dixon, I think, kicked 4 goals in a prelim. Similarly, Mason Cox we've alluded to. So
Clay's was 4 goals, 26 disposals, and 8 tackles and some goal assists as well. That's as good as any that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was through the run of the Dogs, just all getting to work and ending up on the premiership dice. So the Demons, let's wind back to the game on Friday night and really have a deep dive into what it looked like.
Go.
I like the fact the Cats came out. We've talked at length about the power not having a plan there to quell the influence of what could beat them. What could beat power last night? It was the Dogs mids, and they did. The Cats had a similar approach. They said, okay, what can beat us? Clayton Oliver tore us to shreds in round 23. He had 35-plus possessions, kicked 2 goals, and kept them in the game whilst we were smacking them, and then everyone else came along for the party, and the Melbourne Demons got the result. They said, Joel Selwood, righto, you go and stand next to him and make it hard for him. You go sacrifice your influence offensively to try and quell the influence. It worked for patches, but Clayton Oliver still had a big impact. But I like the fact, at least, that that there was a plan. There was a plan. Let's try this. Let's do this. And similarly to last night's game, it fell off early. And the dominance of Melbourne, they looked slick, didn't they? In terms of what we're expecting from Port Adelaide last night, Melbourne looked like they'd had a couple of weeks off. They looked like they'd been bottled up and ready to absolutely explode as soon as that siren went off. And it actually did. And I think what helped with Melbourne, they took the most of their opportunities early, and that just helped them ease and calm themselves down and play their game. And their game is a game of contest and then distributing and using the ball so bloody well. They are, by foot and hand, such an effective side at the moment. Off air, we were discussing the arrival of Mark Williams has turned that football club from 11th in terms of kicking efficiency in 2020 to a top 4 kicking efficiency side in 2021. That's with players that have had their knockers in terms of disposal. Clayton Oliver, who's one that can turn it over a little bit, Jack Vine, but they've all improved that aspect and got to work on the fundamentals of the game, and you see that in the way they move the ball.
Viney had his best game for the year, 34 disposals, 16 contested. He had 9 clearances, just second to Danger, who had 10. Christian Petrarca, 32 goals. He kicked 1-2, 8 clearances at 10 score involvements. Cozzy Pickett had 3 goals to his name. It was another really strong performance from him, and he was just lapping up the involvement of the crowd. Their whole forward line, which we speak a lot about their defence and their midfield, just to press pause, because you have to when we get beaten. We've raised prelim final performances.
Oh, that's
but
big.
Luke from Bendigo has trumped us, and I can't believe I'd forgotten this, given I was thinking a lot about Melbourne in the build-up to today's show. Mm. Jeff Farmer, 2007 prelim. 2000 prelim against North to get in. Had 9 goals in about 45 minutes.
The Wizard. They were going.
How did I forget that?
Yeah, we had a.
I've lost all respect from our producer, Ben.
We had a Fremantle. Ben's got a long sleeve number 33 Demons jumper as well with the collar out of respect to the Wiz.
Nice.
We had a presentation of Fremantle's 25 in 25 a few years ago, and the Wiz got in the 25 of 25, obviously. And when he was announced to the crowd, in the forward line, Hayden Ballantyne, yeah, well done, well done. Mm. Full forward, Matthew Pavlich, pretty good. But the Wiz, it was 3 times as loud as anyone. Wiz got up there and did the old outstretched arms and the chest puffed.
Are you not entertained?
I am here, and he lifted his arms. It was great. So the Wizard kicking 9, that's worth more than the price of admission.
You win, Luke. Itself. You absolutely win. They don't come much better than 9 goals in a prelim, but. So that's a great segue back into what we were talking about, the forward line of Melbourne. So the question was always, do they have enough there to kick a winning score? Well, they kicked 19-11, 125. Ben Brown, he's made a lot of people eat their words. two goals. He had seven marks, four of those contested. His ability to bring it to ground as well. He actually created opportunities for others. Fritz kicked a couple. Spargo kicked two. McDonald had one goal and a goal assist. Their forward line is much more potent than maybe we've given them credit for.
Because Pickett kicks three. So yep. the small's got to work. Didn't you? And it's so much about playing your role and understanding you're going to have your moment. Charlie Spargo is one I've watched really closely all year because, again, Charlie Spargo is a player that people would look at and think, poor old Nathan Jones isn't getting a game, Jake Melksham, all of this. But Charlie Spargo's magnet goes bang. It'd be one of the first Simon Goodwin puts up every week because of that forward pressure he applies and the ability to keep the ball in their forward half and the important little knock-ons as such. And he gets on the end of it a couple on the weekend, kicks two goals with 18 possessions, bringing the ball to ground as a forward. There's nothing better as a small forward and as a coach. When the ball goes inside forward 50, they're not going to mark it every time. But you can't mark one, kick a goal, and then the next two or three, the opposition mark it and just trampoline out of the back 50. So the ability just to take out, clearly Tom Stewart wasn't playing. Jack Henry had an off night. Lockie Henderson hadn't touched the ball for large parts of the first half. And what they did was just, when they couldn't mark, it was just nearly a spoil to the V, to their chest. And that's where Spargo got involved, Cy Pickett and the like. So that forward line versus the Doggies back line, which we're all waiting for them to fall over, the Doggies back line. And they're not doing it at the moment, so it'll be a fascinating watch.
Steve May is a wait and see. Obviously, some tightness to the hamstring, which they say is more back related than anything, which is a bonus.
Back related,
yeah.
Hamstring.
So he's already said there's no way he's missing. He's got 2 weeks to get right, so we'd expect him to do that. But it will be a must watch in the lead in. And then what does that do to their matchups? We'll have a talk about because he may not be the likely choice to go to Norton, given that they might not want to expose him. So that would mean that you'd think Petty. But we can talk about that in just a moment. I want to ask you about the Cats. So the report is that a virus ripped through 48 hours before the opening bounce and that there were several key players who were struck down because of it and even to the point where Geelong had spoken to the AFL about bringing in players from outside the emergency list because they weren't sure whether the players would get up. So we take that seriously and you take that on absolute face value. So, yep, we understand that. But where does this leave Geelong? Andy Maher tweeted, not normally a real stats guy is Andy, normally a touch and feel of the game, history. Yeah. He loves all that and he's
sense of belonging.
But he was prompted by what he saw from Geelong that he went back and has done a bit of research on their scores in finals losses. So 43 points on the board in this one. In 2020, they scored 42 in the qualifier, 50 in the grand final. 2019, 51 in the qualifier, 66 in their other final that they played. In 2018, 46 in the elimination final, 40 in the qualifying final. And 2016, just 60 points in the preliminary final. So those low scores are damning, considering that they gave three first-round draft picks for Jeremy Cameron, who was supposed to be the solution to that problem, and unfortunately wasn't.
It's not happening.
Not that it's all Jeremy Cameron's fault, but, that was a pretty damning stat. Yeah. Those are damning numbers.
Yeah, they just haven't. And there's a multitude of aspects to it, isn't there, in terms of it's personnel-based, it's system-based, it's the opposition you play in finals is stronger and more prepared. And again, we've said this a number of times over the past few years. When are they going to go back to the well and go to the draft? The big watch with the Cats over the preseason will be what happens with that next tier of player they already have on their list to be regular best 22 players, Narkle, Clark, Constable, etc. You know, their longevity at the club is in doubt as well. Have they been burnt enough for them to look elsewhere? So a real watch on that. But in terms of kicking a score in finals, the numbers, they
don't lie.
Yeah, they stare you right in the face. As obvious as the nose on my melon is that it's a real problem. And Jeremy Cameron, the Gary Rowan discussion, it's a real worry and you're devoid of any sort of confidence with the Cats when it gets to the postseason that Gary Rowan can have an impact. And that may sound harsh, but again, the facts are the facts. He hasn't been able to get it done in finals for a long period now.
No, he hasn't. And where to now for the Cats and what changes? Because something needs to change. So the rigid and very strict game plan of slow ball movement and defending when you've got the ball in the hand, that has brought them unstuck now. just too often to be able to stick with it again, because chaos is going to beat control in finals. We've seen it. The evidence base is just too large now to ignore and to argue against. So you can't have the argument that, oh, no, just be safe and sound and protect the ball and do it methodically. We'll get you grand final wins. It just doesn't.
Yep.
We've just seen it.
But it's the catch-22 is Chris Scott has stuck with this for so long, and there was elements of praise for him going into this weekend's match because it worked against GWS. And what we get to this time of year and we see Port Adelaide, a side that just Bulldogs are just a side that missed out on the top four by a millimetre. So the top five sides were far advanced from 6, 7, 8. And for the long parts of the year, the Geelong method worked. And it gets them into the final, gets them double chances and whatnot. But you're right, like it's when against the best and against vibrant, pressurised opponents that can turn it into a contest. It just hasn't worked.
Sunday Crunch Time is for Athena Home Loans. Kick your home loan goals at athena.com.au. Some quick fire questions coming up. Rolled, family made Vietnamese, served fast and fresh. We might even ask you about your former teammate Lachie Neal and that story that unfolded during the week. 0433 98 11 16 is the text line to get involved with us on Sunday Crunch Time. 0433 98 11 16 is the text line for us on Sunday Crunch Time for Athena Home Loans. Kick home loan goals at athena.com.au. This has come through from Glenn in Highton. Geelong received 3 second-round draft picks back from GWS for Cameron. The first-round picks the Cats gave up were the late ones, not the top 10. So, Glenn, yeah, part of that absolutely spot on. So they gave the 3 first-round picks up in last year's draft, 13, 15 and 20. They got 2 future second-round picks back from GWS in that deal. So that took them completely out of last year's first round. And we've seen what 3 draft picks in the first round can do to a rebuild. We saw it with Pickett, Jackson and Rivers. I think Rivers might have just been outside the first round or just inside the first round. And also Butters, Dersma, Rosie. So we've seen what impact 3 first-rounders can have. And we've seen what impact it can have when you stay out of the draft maybe for too long. Let's go through some rapid-fire stuff, Mick Barlow, for Rold, family-made Vietnamese, served fast and fresh. Why don't we start with that? Have Geelong done themselves a disservice in terms of where they've positioned themselves? I mean, their list manager, absolutely one of the best in the business.
I don't think they have. No, I think in terms of what Joel Selwood said post-game. So he said, I want to be at a club that continues to we're going to the well and we're going to try and top up and win. And we can develop our own in those systems. There's examples of development companies. Like Parfitt, he's one that's really grown and become a great player. Jack Henry is a player that's had to earn opportunity for a long time in successful Geelong eras. So there's enough examples that they do well in developing their own. But, yeah, when you do fall over at preliminary finals, the discussion will be had and whether that lack of investment in the draft is hurting them. But I think they're an admirable club the way they keep going to the well and just trying their hardest to win every year. Be a good club to support.
Lachie Neal, your take.
Speaking of the first-round draft pick discussions, I think this all happened really quickly. And I pen an article every week on a Sunday for the West Australian newspaper. And there's in my piece today, I talk about the Lachie Neal week and what that would have looked like. And it would have been silly Sunday for Brisbane last Sunday. And they're sitting there enjoying a few beers. And it's the best day on the calendar for AFL players, silly Sunday, because you're as far as detached from the preseason as possible. And Lockie's went from really silly to really silly by Sunday night when it leaked out that there was potential murmurings he might seek a trade back to Fremantle. Now, the whole holistic view of it, and when the dust settled later in the week, the best thing has happened for both football clubs. Brisbane keep their Brownlow medalist, a guy that's been 2 times All-Australian, 2 times best and fairest for them. Brilliant. 2-year contract, and he's staying. Freo, the romance of it shouldn't outweigh the sensibility of the situation that Freo have got a really strong draft hand this year. They've got a top draft pick. They'll get one for Chera. They would have had to part with one of them, maybe both, to get Lachie Neal back. So in terms of the long build, keep Lachie Neal at Brisbane if you're a Fremantle person, because he'll come back eventually. There's my take. He will be back in Fremantle, I would suggest, at the end of this contract. When Fremantle are building,
maybe even at the end of next year.
Well, 2024 is when he comes out and would be available. So Sarong, Young, and Ryan, the three players Freo took in the top 10 a couple of years ago. They'll be in the sweet spot of their career. They'll have another good hand at the draft this year. Andy Brayshaw would have developed into an absolute A-grader by then. So they're a club in a few years I'm watching. And Fremantle would be thinking, Lachie Neale will come back, but we can't give up the Godfather deal to get him back right now.
I thought Freo and Brisbane handled this fantastically. Mm. They didn't get overly emotional about it. They didn't get up in arms about it. They didn't blow up deluxe about it like some sections of the media did.
Because there's a human element of it.
There is a human element. So anyone, I don't have kids that I know of. Beautiful Evie loves it when I make that joke. I am told by everyone that's had that the first one is the scariest. Mm. And one of the most important things to have around you is family support, which they have none of because they're a South Australian boy and a WA girl who are living in Queensland. You don't get any further away, really, from both those states. They're making some decisions and they're having conversations about their future, which good couples do. And they start to talk about, well, what does next year look like if it's like the same as this year where our parents can't get here to help us? We're so far away from home and we don't have really much in the way of support and structure. So then you say, okay, well, what is that? Well, is there an option to go back to Fremantle? I don't know, but I'll get my manager to check. So at least we've got the information that we need. That's what I think was happening here, and I think the club understood that because when he sat in the first meeting with them, he changed his mind at least three or four times in there. So his heart's torn, but he's trying to do the right thing by his family, his career, the club, and what they're doing is getting the information to make the right decision for their family. We all jumped the gun on this in a big way. As his father said, everyone's five steps ahead of where this story's actually at. Just slow down.
Yep. Get the information, assess the information on merit, as they did. And by Thursday, you know, the dust had settled and Lachie Neale stays a Lion. He is a player and a person that, he is not trying to put himself above anything. Oh, it's getting too hard. You're right. The personal situation around first baby, COVID throws a whole spanner in the works. Yep. Like it's like trying to bloody run through that brick. You can't do it.
No, you can't
get there. So they haven't had any family support from their West Australian connection for 2 years, essentially. So if that was to linger another year, which touch wood it doesn't for the whole of Australia, that would make the process a lot more simple. Because within being an AFL athlete, you do have the flexibility to make that work. And without COVID, Jules would be able to go back to WA for a good extended period. Then a bye would come and Lachie can go over for 10 days, all of that stuff. And touch wood, it's made a little bit more simple with vaccination rates going up and the world becoming a little bit more normal.
And Chris Fagan, who knows this situation well, to be away from your family and your kids for long periods of time, he said in an interview this week, I would be doing the same thing that he is.
Yep.
He's doing the right thing by his family, making the right decisions, getting all the information that they need. It's amazing in this industry that we're so very big on making sure that we say, oh, people asking for help, put your hand up, and we commend and we encourage and we ask people to put your hand up if you're struggling. Well, that's what these guys are essentially doing, putting their hand up to say, this could be a real struggle. What do we do about it? And the moment that they got slapped down by certain sections, and I just thought it was, again, overdone. Yep, ask the questions. Well, hang on, he's got 2 years left, and what does that mean? And wow, there's some money that's been paid up front that's not. Yeah, okay, but remember the human element to this first and foremost.
Yeah.
That's why you got to commend the Brisbane Lions because they're a very well-run organisation. They handled it maturely, just like Fremantle did.
Mm.
We can't probably say the same for everybody.
Yeah, and social media throws that into, in a formal world, probably even 3 or 4 years ago.
And they copped abuse on social media.
That situation would have been discussed and Lachie would have hand in the air, had an exit meeting planned for, the Monday or the Tuesday, and actually would have been able to get in there. And all the talk and the scuttlebutt is that he didn't want to bring it up during the finals period because it would have.
Exactly.
And Chris Fagan's probably said, oh, look, Matt, you can always come to me. My door is always open and we can discuss this and I'll wrap my arms around you and get. And Lachie, again, the Adam Treloar situation, walk down and say, oh, I feel better. I'm in the right place. They understand there's going to be moments where, Jules may have to go back and, glass half empty and devil's advocate. I might miss a game or two because this and that. Mate, 100%, we're going to support the person. We're always going to support the person. And that's why Chris Fagan is who Chris Fagan is and how highly regarded he is.
Yeah, well said. 0433 98 11 16 to have your say on it. But there was talk of that he owes Brisbane an apology. I think there's some that might even owe Lachie Neale an apology after what went on this week. When we come back, I'm going to get you to look ahead to 2 weeks' time and maybe put your selection hat on. We'll get you to move the magnets on selection for the grand final. 2 weeks out, I know, but let's get an early look at it. Sunday crunch time for Athena. Check out low home loan rates at athena.com.au. And that was all for Rolled Fast Fresh Vietnamese.
You're listening to Crunch Time.
Greatly appreciate your company this afternoon on Sunday crunch time for Athena Home Loans. Keep your text coming through 0433 98 11 16. Glenn making a good point about the Cats also gave away their first round selection this year to get Max Holmes in. And that's a speculative pick, as we know. Played some good footy, Max Holmes, but does that disadvantage him as well? So that's an interesting one too. Just quickly before I get you to move the magnets, the Lockie Neal chat, we had a couple of people text in going, would Brisbane have been better or worse off with him staying? And at first glance, you go, oh, well, no, he's a Brownlow medalist. But as the text points out, they were 7-0 without him. And if they had got two first-rounders for him, they would have got four picks in the first round in this year's draft, or maybe three this year and one next year. It is an interesting question. And as some journos have pointed out, he won't be the last to ask to break a contract because of COVID.
And that inside mid-role, as good, Lockie Neal's nearly the best in the game at playing it. But the inside mid-role is dispendable. Like, if it's a key forward, then it's a different discussion. If it's, you know, a key post, absolute different discussion. But as you mentioned, without them, they were really successful this year. It must be noted they played the weaker sides when Lockie wasn't playing. But if they sat back in the cool light of day and said, righto, we can get Frio's first-round draft picks, so then we have two first-round draft picks. We might even get two of them off Frio here. And we go with a huge draft capital to the draft. Cam Rayner's coming back. We'll turn him into a centre square clearance player and utilise his offensive weaponry.
Mm.
And then Dev Robertson's one that's a young player that they stole in the draft, really.
Oh,
they stole in the draft at 20.
Yep.
He comes in, develops through the midfield, a huge amount of upside with other Brisbane Lions players that aren't reaching their peak yet. I was really concerned as a Fremantle person that the romance of it would have been great. Bring Lockie back, but at what cost? You know, that would have brought them closer to finals, but further away from a premiership, in my humble opinion.
And of the 22 that lost that final by a point to the Dogs, I think the majority in that team, at least 60%, still haven't reached the best of their football yet. So Berry, McCluggage, Bailey, Stasevich, Rayner, McInerney, Hipwood's got to come back in. Joe Danaher will get better in his second year at the club. Harris Andrews is still young. Robertson, Coleman, Cockatoo, Pryor, McStay will get better. Payne, Answorth, Madden, Fuller. They've got so many good young players that aren't yet at the peak of their powers.
Exactly.
So don't worry about Brisbane.
And a lot's made about the Brisbane finals record, 1-6. Like you say, they're a side that have all these experiences. Will help them long term compared to like the Port Adelaide discussions where a lot of their players are at
the pinnacle.
Well, it's
like early Port Adelaide, early 2000s Port Adelaide.
Yeah.
Two minor premierships and a top four finish and weren't able to get through to a grand final than they did in 2004.
Alan Scott, you were wrong. Alan Scott.
All they need is a major sponsor to call them chokers. Right. We're going to get you to move the magnets. So any changes to the teams for the Bulldogs and for the Demons coming into the grand final? What's the 22?
So we'll start with the Doggies. Alex Keith will come in. At the expense of, will it be Cordy or will it be Gardner? It's a flip of the coin. And I think at this stage, I don't have a firm opinion. So Keith's in, and one of those two will come out. The Vandermeer discussion will be interesting as he has been listed as doubtful with that hamstring tightness. So Jason Johannesson is the one that came on and should play the role. Okay, so if Vandermeer plays, if Vandermeer's fit, he's in and Johannesson's a sub.
Waitman's
in.
Yep.
Okay, either for JJ or Vandermeer.
And what about the Ds?
Ds essentially unchanged. Hibbard, does he go out for Joel Smith, depending on matchups? But I think unchanged. Okay.
Beautifully done, Michael Barr. That was a chicane. Trade quality hand tool was lifetime warranty. That was Sunday Crunch Time for Athena Home Loans. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.